Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, motorcycle, boat, RV, whatever it may be. Bundles. They'll do everything they can to save you money, but also make sure you're fully insured. They'll update those policies as well. They are the pros when it comes to insurance. It is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day, Kansas State's defense rises up at the goal line.
There's the snap. The turn and the give is to Kendre Miller. I don't think he made it. I don't think he made it. I don't think he made it. He did not. K-State stops Kendre Miller at the one.
Game went to overtime between Kansas State, TCU, and by the way, Max Duggan was tremendous in that game. All credit to him. Really can't say enough about him. But Kansas State, again, played really well. Really well. And won it. They go to the Sugar Bowl. TCU still ends up, by the way, in the Fiesta Bowl against Michigan. All right. There are a lot of great privileges in this job, and one of them is the opportunity to talk with one of the best ever, and that is the outstanding Dick Vermeil. Coach, always a pleasure. Great to talk with you again. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's always great to be affiliated with State College, Pennsylvania.
If I recall correctly, I believe your daughter went to Penn State, and if I recall correctly, I think you used to have a place up near Lamar, right?
Yeah, I still do. My daughter did go there and graduated there, and so did one grandson go there and graduate there.
One of 11, by the way, one of 11 grandchildren.
Yeah.
They're the greatest thing going. I have 7, so I know.
You know what I'm talking about. You're talking about.
Sure, yeah. Do. Coming up on Friday night, at Summit Hall at the Match Factory in Bellefonte. Wine tasting, and this is Vermeil Wines. When did you become deeply interested in wine along the way in your lifetime?
Well, you know, when you grow up in the Napa Valley, Steve, like I did as a youngster, you know, in Calistoga, a little town of 1,800 people at that time, if you couldn't talk about grapes, prunes, or walnuts, or get involved in picking them for 25 cents a bucket or box, you had nothing to talk about. You know? So growing up at Dannon Barn, my dad had an old garage there in Calistoga. I worked in there, and we worked on a lot of the farmers' cars and the vineyard trucks and all this kind of stuff. So, and I developed relationships with the kids in school, you know, that were involved in those businesses. So it was always on my mind. And my grandfather Vermeil made all the Vermeil wines at that time. And I grew up helping him, as did my brother. And so I always had that interest, you know. And wine was always such a big deal in my French-Italian family, you know. The new vintage it releases usually at Easter time, and a couple years old, and the aging factor, the flavors, the nose, all this stuff is being discussed by my dad, my grandfather, and his friends, and it left a real serious interest or curiosity with me. And I asked a friend one time, you know, I said, my dad and his family was really involved in the wine world, and I'd like to make a few cases of Vermeil Cabernet. And the guy who ran a little winery named Paul Smith on the Edge Winery.
Yep.
He said he'd do it. He'd do it. So He made about 150 to 200 cases. We picked the grapes from the Freddie Annie Vineyard, which we still pick today. My great-grandfather on the Italian side of my family owned a portion of it at one time. And so I said, let's do it. So our first release was 1999.
Mm, okay. Perfect.
Well, we won the Super Bowl at the Rams.
Yep.
So the little winery sells all those cases quickly.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, let's keep doing it. I said, that's great. I had no money involved in it. So we kept doing it. Then some friends of mine, entrepreneurs, very successful business, came to me and said, why don't we turn your hobby into a business? I said, if you guys want to do it, you've got the money, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. So we went to On the Edge Winery. We ended up buying the little winery stock, what they had in barrels, bought them out, bottled it as Vermeil Wines, and officially went into full-fledged Vermeil wine business in 2008.
Yeah.
Producing about, around off 2,000 cases a year. Mostly reds. We do make a Chardonnay. That the grape comes from Dutton Ranch over in Sonoma County, and we make a Sauvignon Blanc, which is a Napa Valley grape as well. And it just became a business. And now, you know, it took 12 years. It's a business that's in the black.
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. We have a tasting room in Napa.
Yep.
We always have people in the tasting room from Pennsylvania. I have 151 wine club members in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia area right now, because it is now legal to ship direct wines into Pennsylvania, which it never used to be.
Yep.
And overall, we have about 515 wine club members now, and it's going well. The tasting room does well, and they know it. And by meaning doing well, it means that it's paying for itself. The wines are high quality, high end, expensive, and we have fun with it. Our clientele now, for the most part, are charity events, wine events, country club events, where we go pour our wines and sell our wines there, and actually sign up wine club members. Normally at an event like we have coming up on December 16th there, and like you said, in Belmont, we'll sign up 5 to 10 wine club members and sell some wine, and they also purchase wine to use as a tool to hold the dinner with and create money and raise money for what they call, you know, the lady basketball coach at Penn State, Carolyn Keeger.
Yeah, Carolyn Keeger, yep.
Keeger, is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, it is. Yep.
It's her project. And it's a fundraiser for what she calls the Pink Zone, whose mission is to help breast cancer patients and survivors. And hopefully we'll be successful. Hopefully we'll do some good wine business, and hopefully she'll make some money for her charity.
And that's what it's all about in the end. Because my broadcast partner for Penn State football, Jack Ham, has gone out to Sonoma. And he did go to On the Edge during the tour a couple of years ago. So, you know, let's face it, you're turning out great product, I mean, which is really cool. I got to ask you, though, about the Garage Cabernet, because that's got to be personal to you.
Well, we never did. Somebody nicknamed it the Garage Cabernet, but we never had that on a label.
Yeah.
Because my dad was in the garage business, had an old garage behind our house, like I say, about three first downs before behind the kitchen. And people named our first Cabernet because they thought it was cute, the Garage Cabernet, you know.
Right.
But our real Vermeil label became, you know, Vermeil Cabernet, Vermeil, we have two different Cabernets, the Rosedale Block Cabernet, Pickett Road Block Cabernet. Then we have the Jean-Louis Vermeil Cabernet, which was the hobby wine initially, and that has 20% of Cabernet Franc in it, but it's still a Cabernet. But somehow, someone nicknamed it the Garage Cabernet, and it stuck for a long time.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
This was a big year for you. What was it like when you received the phone call that said, you get a gold jacket in Canton?
Well, you know, I was actually flying into the Napa Valley to spend a couple weeks working in the wine business. I was in the airport in San Francisco, walking off my American Airlines flight, and I get this phone call. It's David Butler. He says, Coach, this is David Butler from Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I'm not calling you to buy a case of wine. He says, I'm calling to let you know you are the coach finalist for the Hall of Fame this year. And what that means is if they do put a coach in, it's going to be you. And I was flabbergasted. I mean, I actually ended up leaning over and leaning against the wall. And I said to Carol, you know what happened? I was just told I'm the finalist for the Coaches Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame. And she blurts out, well, it's about time. But then, anyway, it was very, it's hard to describe those kind of feelings. You know, they really are. It just, it startled me. It's never been a deep expectation in my mind. You know, the Vermeil family never discussed Dick Vermeil going into the Hall of Fame at any time around a dinner table. And I just never put myself in that category. I knew 2 or 3 years ago I started becoming a candidate because it would come up in the voting process, but I always thought it would go to someone more deserving, and this time it didn't. It came to me. So yeah. All of a sudden in Canton, I find myself there August 6th thanking everybody that made it possible, you know, and it's still a little overwhelming. It really is.
You always had the reputation of somebody, obviously, you have to understand talent and so forth, but you always had the ability, it seemed, to understand not just talent, but character that went with talent. What qualities were you always looking for in players that could make a difference for you, but also had the character to play the game?
Well, you know, I love the hungry profile, the kid that has a great drive to excel, and looking for an opportunity to be what he has the dream to be. And, you know, and sometimes it's glaring. You know, you can just tell. You're not motivating him. What you're doing is providing him an opportunity to do what he wants to do badly. And hopefully you provide him the time and the coaching to bring him along so he can be successful. You know, you cut a lot of kids over the years that don't make it.
Yeah.
You know. But you're always looking for that kid that has the talent that not a lot of people knew about or even thought about, and give him time to mature and take advantage of that ability. You know, Kurt Warner's a great example. You know, Herman Edwards was a free agent out of San Diego State. Yeah. You know, London Fletcher was up for the Hall of Fame now in the NFL, was a college free agent. It's when we signed him with the Rams. You know, there's a lot of those guys out there. So if you always have in the back of your mind, you're looking for character kids that really have a desire to excel and will do whatever it takes for them to be the best they can be. And I think it helped me to come up in coaching through high school, junior college, and then the NFL.
Right.
Because you got to evaluate a lot of personalities at a different age group and different levels of maturity. And I think it always helped me gave me a little more ability to look into a kid and see where he's coming from and where he might go, you know.
All right. Oh, I remember your last UCLA team, I think it was John Shira, was a heart and soul kind of guy for you.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get Ron Jaworski in Philadelphia, but people don't realize that when you went to the Rams, your starting quarterback there was going to be Trent Green. So what did you see in Kurt Warner where you said, I'd still want him on the roster even though I'm starting camp with Trent Green as my quarterback?
Well, you know, really as the story goes, Kurt Warner was there the year before Trent Green.
Okay.
As my third quarterback. And then the next year we brought Trent Green there to be our quarterback, and he got hurt in the third preseason game, and we went with Kurt Warner, who had been our scout team quarterback the entire year, the year before. And, you know, we just had a hunch. And, you know, you got to be lucky, too. It's not all genius, believe me, Steve. You got to be a little lucky.
Yep.
And we were fortunate. I thought he could play, and I thought he could play well. I didn't have any idea he could play as well as he did, okay?
Yeah.
No one could touch, not anybody. I had great coaches and Mike Martz and Al Saunders and Jim Hennepin and those guys offensively. And by that time, the third year, we had developed, I knew we were a good football team. We had too many good players that had been through two tough years of training camp and losing and kept battling and just had, you know, a depth of character that you don't get to be around very often on any kind of team. And so I knew all we need was a catalyst on that field that could go ahead and allow everybody else to be as good as they could be. But I did not know that Kurt Warner could play at a Hall of Fame level right off the bat. Right off the bat. Yeah.
I think if anybody were to say that, hell, I knew he was right away. You're lying. During the time when you were broadcasting, did you on CBS and ABC, and then, you know, and obviously along the way paths would cross, did you enjoy that part of it, at least that time in your life?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. You know, it gave me an opportunity to watch other coaches coach.
Yeah.
Both on the college level and the NFL. The first 5 years, I was did about 90% of the games I broadcast were NFL games,
yeah.
And 10% was college bowl games. And then sometimes I'd double up during the season and do both a pro game and a college game. But then I went to ABC, and I was doing 90% college games and 10% pro games, NFL playoff games. So I got to watch coaches coach. I got to watch assistant coaches coach. I got to sit in the locker rooms and sit next to kids and listen to what they say and how they talk to each other and what they like, they don't like. I got to sit in the coaches' meetings, because having had been a football coach in all levels, it opened a lot of doors for me when I went on to campuses. I'd find myself putting on football clinics, you know, which was
right.
Fun.
Yeah.
Passed on some of the things I had learned as I grew as a coach, and then listening to other people, and it helped me a lot. It really did. Yeah.
Finally, you've given back a lot during the course of your career.
I mean,
you've donated a lot of time, a lot of energy to different causes along the way. Who instilled that in you along the way, where it became a part of your fabric and your family's fabric?
Well, I think it goes all the way back to the small town I lived in.
Sure.
Where if anybody had a problem, everybody else rallied around and helped them with the problem. You know, whether it be health, emotional, social, accident, you know, that kind of 1,800 people, you know, and my graduating class from high school, we had 29 kids in it.
Okay. Wow.
And every kid in that class, their dad was like my second dad. You couldn't get away with anything.
You right. know,
everyone had the right to discipline you at the time or reprimand you at the time without concern what your parents might say. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it creates an atmosphere where everybody is sort of helping the other guy. And my mom was really big in it, you know. I don't know how many times we'd sit down at a dinner table. We got somebody sitting at the dinner table. I didn't have a clue who it was, you know. But it was somebody who was experiencing hardship, and she'd bring them home and feed them, you know. And I can remember one time I got two footballs for Christmas. And she made me go give one football to a family in town that was depressed and working hard but underpaid, you know, so their Christmas wasn't nearly as warm and exciting as mine was. And, you know, I've never forgotten that gesture.
Yeah.
I've never forgotten. And so I think a lot of us who get involved in helping charities, and that it comes from the examples you were exposed to as a kid, you know.
Well, 5:30 on Friday, December 16th, at Sunman Hall at the Match Factory in Bellefonte. Start at 5:30. Dick, you'll be there. Vermeil Wines will be the centerpiece. There'll be some discussion, and it's going to be a great night. Have you thought yet what wines you want to feature?
You know, that's up to Bill Kurtzis, our chief operating officer. Bill handles that in the communication. And I'm sure we'll have at least one Cabernet, maybe two.
Yeah.
And we normally pour our blend, our 30 Roman numeral 34 for Super Bowl 34.
Yep.
We'll normally pour both whites, a Chardonnay and a Sauvignon Blanc. We only make 200 cases of Chardonnay, and about this year probably just about 110 cases of Sauvignon Blanc. And but they all sell out.
Mm.
And every once in a while, we'll bring a Zinfandel, you know.
Yeah, but, nice.
You know, berries. I haven't actually seen the menu and how the chef has the wines match with the the menu yet, but it'll be good. It'll be fun. Sometimes I have a hard time getting to talk wine and not football.
I understand that.
I went into New York now last month twice on a Friday night and a Saturday night, and you talk about those Giant fans. My God, they don't forget anything. You know, Mirror Battlelands and so-and-so players and all these kinds of things. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, we think the wine's good. You know?
Yeah. Once they're done telling you about Joe Pizarcik and Herman Edwards, yeah, then they'll say.
Yeah.
By the way, wine's really great, Dick.
The people will enjoy the wines. The people that really appreciate good wines are, you know, there are not a lot of people that have the palate or even the pocketbook to buy a lot of high-end quality wines.
Yeah.
And there are no average to poor at wines made in the Napa Valley.
Right.
You know, 4% of, 89% of the grapes picked in the United States come out of California.
Yep.
But only 4% of them come out of the Napa Valley.
Really?
9% of them come out of Sonoma County.
Mm.
So it's high end quality grapes. You know, to make less expensive wines, you have to make large volumes. We don't have the capacity to do that. So we decided to go for the high end, and there's not a lot of people, but more and more every day that people that have the palate and the appreciation for higher end wines, you know, and hopefully there in Delphont we'll have some. I hope so, but I'll tell you this: they're going to enjoy it anyway. If they spend the money's going to help charity.
Yep,
and they'll enjoy the wines. They don't have to buy any; they'll still have a good time.
They absolutely will, and listening to you, they absolutely will. It's at Sunman Hall, Match Factory, Belfont, Friday the 16th. Starts at 5:30. It's going to be spectacular, benefiting the Pink Zone and all the great work they do with breast cancer research and treatment, and that is what it's going to be on the 16th. Coach, what an absolute pleasure. Always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for your time today, whether we were talking football or we were talking wine.
Steve, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to market the project. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Dick Vermeil. Great to have the coach on the show today. And he'll be in Belfont on the 16th, starting at 5:30. All right.
Same day as Rose Bowl Media Day at Beaver Stadium. That's going to be a heck of a day in Happy Valley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the quarterback club, things like that.
Wow.
We're doing quarterback club that day.
Oh, man.
In fact. So, a little busy. A little busy. That'll be just fine. All right. We will take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. You know, because Matt is on Aaron Judge watch right now, he didn't hear a single thing.
Me and Rich Scarcella. Rich was literally watching MLB Network now before he jumped on with us.
Because
so I'm not the only one.
That's all you guys do. I mean, I'm trying to tell you, it doesn't matter. Let him go to the Giants. He'll take the cash. All good. You can replace him with somebody. I'm sure you got somebody in the farm system.
No, senor!
Currently playing at Somerset someplace, right? No. You could have Trey Turner.
Well, there are, but...
You could have Trey Turner, but you blew him off.
Nah, I'd rather Correa. Or Bogart.
I see. Oh, I see. Oh, okay. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, RV, boat, motorcycle, whatever it may be. They will do everything they can to make sure you're fully insured. And they'll make sure they do everything to also make sure that you save money. And they'll update your policies. They're the best in the business. Outstanding. and great people, too. I mean, just like genuinely nice people who care. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. It's interesting, Dick Vermeil was talking about, hey, look, you know, they don't mass produce wine. You know, it's high end. And I thought of the suit, and I asked him once, I said, what's your favorite wine? And he said, Boone's Farm in a Carton. I mean,
get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
It's such a concern. I don't know.
Hope he doesn't do that at a holiday party.
I will be a no-show.
Aw. So. We're going to miss you.
Well, no, I have the football banquet Sunday.
Ah, okay.
I have the football banquet starting at 1 o'clock on Sunday. I've got game Wednesday. Talk show Thursday. We might have Kale Thursday night.
All right.
We'll see. And we're still waiting to hear. So that's a maybe. Then Friday I travel. Saturday I've got a game at noon with Illinois. Sunday is the football banquet. So I'll miss the party.
And Eagles Giants. More importantly.
I got the football banquet on Sunday.
See, this timed out well for me. I can go right to the party after Eagles-Giants is over.
I got the football banquet. Then Monday is... Nothing on Monday. Nothing on... on Tuesday, I've got the Hoops Club luncheon. Wednesday, nothing. Thursday, talk show. Friday the 16th, when Dick Vermeil's coming to town, I've got a quarterback club and Rose Bowl Media Day. And Saturday, yeah, we got a party to go to. 18th, Sunday, I've got a game with Canisius. Then 19th, nothing. 20th, nothing. There may be bowl practices I'll be going to besides like 21st something, 22nd I got a game with Quinnipiac. It's a late game too. It's at 8:30. 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th are holidays. 27th, 28th, whatever. 29th I've got a game at 2 in the afternoon with Delaware State, and then I go to California on the 30th. And then I have to go from California to Detroit. On the 3rd, because I've got a basketball game at Michigan on the 4th. Then I'm back on the 5th, back on the 6th, and then on the 7th, I have to go down to Philadelphia because I've got a game at the Palestra on the 8th. So it's like, so it's that kind of rotation right now. It's just...
Yeah, it comes in bunches.
Look.
Well, it's good, though.
I'm not digging ditches here, for goodness sakes. I got the job of all jobs, for goodness sakes.
Rose Bowl to Penn State, Michigan, that's a pretty nice week right there.
Yeah, but I did that. That's what I did 6 years ago. Same thing.
How about that? Wow.
Literally.
Okay.
Literally. I went from there to Detroit.
There's so many historical moments with connections with this matchup. Penn State, 100 years later in the Rose Bowl. 6 years later, you've got Penn State the Rose Bowl, then Penn State Michigan hoops later in the week. That's pretty funny.
Well, let me tell you a story about that. I always have a story. Time for story time with Steve. So I go to leave, and I went on the university charter out. Because it just turned out basketball-wise it worked out. Now, I don't know when the university charter is leaving. I don't this time. So either way, I'm going on the 30th, whether it's commercially or with them, depending on what they say. So 6 years ago, and they tell us, park at Medler Field, Lebrano Park. That's where the buses are leaving from to take everybody to the airport. And I think we had to go to Harrisburg. All right? Because the plane wasn't going out of here. We had to go to Harrisburg. Okay. So I parked my car. But the difference is, remember, I'm not coming back on the charter because I have to go do the Rose Bowl, did the game with USC, then the next morning got up and got a cab to the airport and got a flight through Chicago, and then eventually I got to Detroit. Yeah, and then took a cab out to Ann Arbor. And then I did the game on the 4th, and it turned out they wanted to do something with James for a video on the 5th at like 7 in the morning. I'm like, okay, so, and it turned out that the charter, we had trouble leaving Detroit on the charter from Ypsilanti. They had a problem with the de-icing machine because the one they had broke down and they had to go get another one. So we didn't get back until, I don't know, 2 in the morning.
Oh, boy.
3 in the morning. 2 or 3 in the morning. I think it was 3 in the morning, I think, we got back. It's just because of happenstance. But that, I'm fine. I'm just sitting there like, okay, I'll get a couple hours sleep, then I'll go do the interview with James. It was the interview with James is going to be about 45 minutes. I get back to my car, and there are tickets all over my car. I'm sitting there like you got to be kidding me.
Oh, my almighty!
There's like 2 warnings, ticket. I'm like, excuse me. All right. First of all, over here in the back, right now the campus is closed. Okay. The students aren't here. Okay. I've been out doing stuff for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a major violation.
Like, come on. And the only reason my car is the only one in the lot. I'm certainly not taking up space because everybody else had already come and gotten their cars and left. Well, I didn't come back until 2 days later. I was like, oh, come on. I'm standing there at 3 in the morning and I'm looking at it. I'm like, thinking to myself, this isn't right. But I paid it, so I moved on. And then I went in and I did the interview with James and the next morning and onward and upward. And in fact, the irony is I then had to go to the Plester and do a basketball game. That weekend. Same thing. Except that one was with Michigan State. So I had to go Rose Bowl, Michigan, Palestra.
Right, I remember
same
that
thing.
Game.
It's going to be Rose Bowl, Michigan, Palestra again. Kind of cool. But I said, you got to be kidding me. All I kept thinking was, they're trying to close whatever budget deficit here, one ticket at a time. What are they doing? What are you doing here? Come on. This isn't right. I did exactly what you asked me to do.
Should have fought it.
You asked me. I didn't have any time to fight it.
Yeah.
I had to get up. I had to go do the interview with James that day. You know, I had to do this show. Then I had to do whatever on the Friday, catch up on some stuff, do the show. Then Saturday, I had to travel. In fact, I think Friday I traveled because the game of the Plester was on a Saturday. So I had to travel on Friday. So, I mean, when did I have time to fight it? I just paid it and moved on. I was like, okay, fine. But I thought, man, this stinks. I was like, this isn't fun. Oh, man. All right. Hey, everybody else has bigger problems. I paid it with complete ease. No problem. All right. Everybody has bigger problems than that. It's just it was a funny story. Okay. You can hear me laughing about it now, so. The offensive coordinator at Ohio State. Like Kevin Wilson, I think he's going to become the head coach at Tulsa. Really? How about Scott Satterfield? Did you see that one?
I saw something I didn't quite recall exactly what happened, but I saw it in passing.
Yeah, he ended up taking the job at Cincinnati. Okay. Well, yep, Kevin Wilson is going to be the one to take the Tulsa job. He had been the head coach in Indiana at one point. He is going to stay and coach the playoff game. But Kevin Wilson's going to leave Ohio State. He's going to take the Tulsa head coaching job. 6 years at Ohio State, by the way. Did a good job. And always terrific offensive mind. Always. Scott Satterfield took the Cincinnati job. Guess who Louisville's playing in the bowl game? Cincinnati. They're playing at the Wasabi Fenway Bowl. Now, we're going to do our little thing tomorrow. Will you watch? Are you interested?
Perfect.
Okay? All right. Today with Dick Vermeil and with Rich. Okay. You know, we had some fish to fry. We got Scott Lauber tomorrow, too, to talk about the Trey Turner signing. Look, it's a good signing. He will help them, especially short term. Speed, some power, can drive in some runs. Is no better than an average shortstop. I mean, he's okay, but he's no better than an average shortstop. He hits mediocre to poor pitching really well. He does not hit great pitching well, though. And it's an 11-year deal, which means he'll be 41 when it's done. The holiday party's on Sunday?
Correct.
Remember last year when we went? Oh, you didn't go last year.
I was not able to go last year, no.
Yeah. No. So we're going over. Great event. Really had a great time with Roger and Denise and everybody. And, you know, great beverages. And I look in the corner, and there's this guy in the corner, right, pouring out of this cardboard box. And it's a suit, another Boone's Farm moment. I'm like, we have good stuff over here. What are you doing?
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells foul.
I don't know how the chief takes it. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Jack Frost has put a chill in the air and Santa is on his way. As you take time to celebrate the holidays with your family, let our family make sure you're protected from the unexpected. From all of us at Purdy Insurance, may this holiday season bring you and your families lots of love, joy, laughter, and peace.
Back, pumps, looks. He is floating it deep for A.J. Brown, who has it.
He took it.
And he scores! A.J. Brown took it away from Trey Avery and scored his second touchdown of the game.
Merrill Reese and his usual brilliance to go with Brown's brilliance and Hurts brilliance. I mean, brilliant. Okay. The Eagles are playing great football. It was a good win yesterday. I mean, one thing about Tennessee, they can play some defense. You can't tell by the way the Eagles went after him yesterday. But they don't have enough offense to compete in big games. They just don't. That is a problem. And the Eagles have the Giants next.
Yep. Three on the road now. Giants, Bears, Cowboys all on the road coming up.
Boy, that's rare to play three in a row on the road in the NFL. Oh, well. The big one will be obviously with Dallas. Because Dallas, to its credit, is playing very well. So I think it'll be a real test because of how well Dallas is playing on both sides of the ball. I did not watch the Colts game last night. I'm going to assume that the Cowboys won, right?
It was actually, they did win going away, but the score was very deceiving because it was a 21-19 game at the start of the fourth quarter, and then the Colts just decided to pack it in and turn the ball over, and then end up being 54-19.
Okay.
I mean, the Colts are pathetic.
Yeah, I watched Michigan State and Northwestern last night basketball. You know, Penn State's playing Michigan State on Wednesday night, so I wanted to look at that.
Big win for Northwestern.
That's the first time since 1962 they have beaten Michigan State back-to-back.
Wow, how about that?
So, Chris Collins' team played very well last night. Very well. Malik Hall did not play, nor do I expect him to play on Wednesday night against Penn State. But they did get Akins back, and Akins is a good player. But he, again, first game back on that foot, he was okay. He was 1-6 from the field, 1-5 in threes in the game. I feel like the College Football Playoff Committee got it right. I mean, technically, do I think Ohio State is better than TCU? Yes, of course I do. On a neutral field, Ohio State against TCU is a minimum touchdown favorite, minimum. But I feel that you should not penalize a team because they risked a 13th game and bump a team that did not over them. It makes for a tougher matchup with Georgia, but I just don't think it's right that when a team is 12-0 and they risk it a 13th time and you're 11-1 and you aren't risking it, I think it's hard to flip-flop those two. That's just me. They risked it, you didn't. And the reason you didn't is because you didn't win your division. So I feel like, you know, in the end they got it right. Thanks to Rich Scarsella and Dick Vermeil for being on the show today. Our thanks to you for listening, as always, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Neil Coulong tomorrow on the NFL. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, your home for Penn State football and the Rose Bowl. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.